Welcome to Up Next in Commerce, the show that takes you to the front lines of what's happening in digital, retail, and beyond, with conversations from fast-growing startups to the Fortune 500 and everything in between. You'll get a glimpse into what's next. I'm your host, Stephanie Postles, the co-founder and CEO of Mission.org, and I'll be your guide through all the trends, innovations, and hot topics in the world of commerce. Welcome to another episode of Up Next in Commerce. Today, I'm talking to Rob Bossen, the owner of Grey Duck Group, which manufactures and sells outdoor equipment like stand-up paddleboards, canoes, and more. We're talking about everything from how to start a company in a lower-risk manner to onshoring your manufacturing to reduce supply chain risk. And we even go into how Rob thinks about innovation and our thoughts on the future of inflatable products. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you have a really interesting background that reminds me a bit of myself because you're in this world of finance and you're like, yeah, working with supply chain finance in that industry. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're in the world of outdoors. So I want to hear what this was like for you. Like, why? Why did you start an outdoors company after working in finance for many years?
Well, I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts and it seems like the backgrounds on a lot of your guests have been varied over time, and my story is very similar in that way too. So, I graduated from the University of Wisconsin in Eau Claire with a degree in management information systems and went into the corporate world working for Cargill and doing systems work and realized that I couldn't see myself in that environment for the next 30 years. And so I had a love for personal finance. I grew up with a grandfather who tried to prod me into saving and investing and things like that. And I took some personal finance courses in college and really enjoyed that. And so I made a switch into a role as a financial advisor, which at the age of 25, I don't think I really knew what I was doing, but I went for it and ended up doing that for a period of time. Did really good at the analytical side of the business, strategy and that sort of thing, but was not the greatest at the sales and marketing side. And so ended up leaving that career after a few years and went back into the corporate world and tried to bring those two worlds together. Some of that systems work along with having some of the background in terms of that field experience and understanding what financial advisors are doing. And so lived in that world for quite some time and then ended up getting my MBA in night school after a while and realized that if I didn't use what I learned during that process, that I would lose it. So the accounting side, the marketing side of things. And so I was like, well, I'm going to be in the corporate world. What's a side hustle that I can do that would be fun, could involve the family, and then maybe make this a second career at some point down the road. And so the rules were it had to be fun. It had to be easy to start. And so the timing happened to be in 2010 when paddleboarding was up and coming. And in the Midwest, there just was no sourcing, no place to get paddleboards. So started calling around to see if there was any suppliers, and there wasn't. And so I thought, well, maybe we can start a little stand-up paddleboard company. And so we started Silver Creek Paddle with my wife and hit the beach, spun up a website, and that was the beginning of my paddleboarding career was that. So I was doing that while working the corporate gig and having a good time with it. And eventually got to the point where I was like doing the math, how many paddleboards do I have to sell before I can quit my corporate gig and move to that full time, and realized that it was going to take a lot. I was going to have to sell a lot of paddleboards. So I tried to figure out a way, can I increase my margin? How do I sell more? So I had a good friend who had some contacts in the industry, and we were able to try to figure out a way to sell more paddleboards to other independent specialty retailers in the Twin Cities and around the Midwest. And so I started bringing in, went out to California. It was like, how do I get better margins? And they're like, just buy more product.
Easy.
Easy, right? So we, what I ended up doing was traveling around the Midwest, took vacation from my corporate job, traveled around the Midwest trying to get some new dealers to kind of go in with me on buying additional product. And they all said, call me in the spring. This was a fall trip that I made. Call me in the spring. So let's see if there's any demand that we've got. And so during the winter, I ordered a container of boards and brought them into the upper Midwest. And then in the spring, just started dialing all those people that I had met in the fall and seeing if they were interested in bringing in boards. And so that started the process of becoming kind of a Midwest distributor of paddle boards. And eventually we grew that business to be significant enough that I had to make a choice whether I was going to stick with a corporate job or try to make a go of it. And so
hard choice. I don't know.
Exactly. And it just got to be too much. Mm-hmm. There was just way too much going on and way too busy. And so ended up actually getting an offer to work for a paddleboard manufacturer out of Southern California at the time. And we ended up kind of merging the Midwest business that I had with what they were doing. And then I started running sales and logistics for that company for a handful of years. And then eventually realized that I wanted to kind of run my own show again. Mm-hmm. And that's when I left that job. I started working with a good friend of mine from high school as a sales rep for some other outdoor brands. And then started Grey Duck Outdoor on the side.
Oh, so Grey Duck was on the side from your side project.
Side from the side, exactly.
Okay, got it. All right.
So we started, I was working with kind of back in working with the accounts that I had been working with before. So I was selling mostly to independent outdoor gear shops in the upper Midwest and selling them paddles and life jackets and backpacks and things like that. And then spun up Grey Duck. So that was in 2016, and we've been growing ever since. So, you know, the genesis of the company was really trying to bring some things that were unique to the Midwest in terms of the type of paddling that we do up here, design some boards for that type of environment. And so we started to do that. I had been working on a paddle board that you could paddle in the Boundary Waters Canoe area, which is way in the northern border of Minnesota. And then on the Canadian side, it's Quetico Provincial Park. So there's this huge amount of water that is in the northern part of Minnesota, and it's traditionally been canoe country. And I've been growing up going to that area since I was about 10 years old. And so this was just an opportunity to try to design boards that might work in that area as well. And so one of the products that I first started working on, in addition to just getting some basic boards into our offering, was a board called the Quetico. And the Quetico was a paddleboard basically that you could portage like a canoe. And so the idea there was you could paddle it from lake to lake. And in between these lakes, there was paths, rugged paths that would allow you to bring your canoe or your kayak or your paddleboard from lake to lake. And traditionally, paddleboards are just hard to carry. They're carrying them to the side and they're hanging down low. So getting them from lake to lake was difficult. And so the idea with the Quetico was that we wanted to build something that you could literally just pick up, put it over your head, and carry it just like a canoe. And you'd have the board balanced. It would be easy to see where you were walking. You weren't going to have it in the way. And so I filed for a patent on that design. We got that patent in early 2019, I want to say, or maybe if that was when I made the provisional, I can't remember now. But patented that product, and that's been kind of a key pinnacle product on in our line since that time.
I love hearing about, you know, how companies were started, because I think right now, you know, so many people look at different companies and they're like, it's all or nothing. You have to take the risk. You just got to jump in, and like, life's too short to do it otherwise. And I'm not really that way. Like, I'm not a huge risk taker. I'm like a little bit here and there, but also within reason, and done my research. And it's awesome hearing about, you know, how you started the side project and you kept your job and like you didn't make this huge move right away that could potentially ruin, you know, someone financially, and just kind of like kept experimenting, testing, seeing, learning, and then being like, okay, now's the time. Now I know I've, you know, got this knowledge. I have things under my belt now to actually start my own company. So it's always cool to hear like how companies start, because everyone is different for everyone I talk to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that from that's just been, always been my approach in terms of transitioning, has been to try to take some small bets, take some small chances, and better understand just, will this work? Are we getting the feedback that we want? And every once in a while, you got to make the leap.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have a little bit of time to experiment, get some feedback, see whether it makes sense to pursue that. I mean, I can say that when I was first floating the idea of starting Gradec, you know, I confided in some friends what I was up to, and you know, the consensus was, you know, the world does not need another paddleboard brand.
They just might. You never know.
which is absolutely true. But
yeah, they need a good one. That's what they need.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so we did like, that's an example of one where I just kind of blew past the advice and just decided that we could do some things that were unique and some things that were different that I think that the market could respond to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is that it's always finding that balance between taking some small risks, and then every once in a while, you got to just go for it and see what happens.
Yeah.
But in a controlled manner. Like,
that's a tricky thing in the early days, getting advice from friends and family. Usually yeah. I'm like, nope, I don't want to hear it. Like, you don't really know my full vision and the holes that I see. And I mean, I always think back to the best advice I ever got was from one of my managers at Google, who was like, you can always come back to corporate. Like, why not go and try the thing? You're already making money with it. It's already doing well, talking about mission.
Yeah.
But she was like, you could always come back. And that always helps me be like, oh yeah, there's always a security blanket if you had to, and taking calculated risks and not always listening to, especially family, because family just wants to like protect you. And they're like, I don't know, Steph, you have it pretty good. Like, why, you know?
Why would you do this? Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's totally true. And that concept of, well, you can always go back is a nice safety blanket for sure, in terms of, or safety net in terms of the ability to go back. And if you needed to start up in the corporate world again, you know, there's plenty of opportunity to do that. It's not like you forgot everything you were doing back then. It's there's always an opportunity to flex those muscles again.
Yep. Yeah. So with Gradec, you all are mostly selling through retailers, or are you also doing direct to consumer from your website?
We're doing a little bit of both.
Okay.
So we're mostly, I would consider us to be an omni-channel retailer, mm-hmm. of paddle boards. And we work through mostly independent specialty retailers, mostly in the Midwest at the moment. We're starting to expand to other areas of the country. I've hired some sales reps, independent sales reps in other areas. So we're just starting to grow in other areas of the country. But we're definitely I'll call it a dealer first. We work through independent dealers, and they're our main customer. And then we sell some through our website as well. If, you know, the customers are in a part of the country where there's no dealer close, we try to work with them to get them the products that they're looking for. And it's interesting, because I think that you kind of have to make a choice early on when you are selling, both through a wholesale channel and through your website, and which one is going to get the priority. Because when you're selling through dealers, that does limit you in what you can do from a marketing and promotional perspective. Like, you're trying not to step on toes, and you're trying to keep things consistent across the country. And so, you know, we're definitely, I would say, a dealer first. We're trying to support those people who are reselling a product, and selling direct is a secondary. And we're just trying to fill in gaps that our dealers can't do through the D2C portion of our business.
Yep, got it. What about international? I mean, whenever I've traveled to different places, I haven't seen stand-up paddleboarding in Europe or Germany, even though they're, you know, many of these places are very outdoorsy. Have you all explored trying to get your product over there?
Yeah, we have explored. Well, I shouldn't say as Gradec, we have not explored it. But when I was working previously in the industry with another brand, we had done some work in Europe, and you know, my philosophy at the moment is, until we've nailed down the US market and we've gotten the penetration that we want here, it's difficult to go to Europe. There's just a bunch of other other things to deal with. Figuring out how you're going to distribute all of that is just, it's just going to make things, makes things interesting. And the, in the European market is just different than the US market in terms of the boards that they use. It's almost all inflatable product over there. So most of, I would say 90% of the boards that are being sold in Europe are inflatables, whereas the US, there's just more room, more room for storage, more room for, we have bigger vehicles with
big everything,
more roof racks and things like that. So our markets are different. The, over there is very much an inflatable market just because of space constraints and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I'm like, I don't know why I haven't seen that very often whenever I've been there. And it's interesting to think about the inflatable aspect of it, which I see actually here in Austin quite often. People have, I didn't even know that was a thing until this past year when everyone's like bringing inflatable paddle boards. I'm like, where do you get those? Now I know, but.
Yeah. No, that's probably the biggest, you know, that's the growth, that's where the growth is inflatables in terms of, you know, just convenience, portability, storage, durability. They check a lot of boxes. In terms of on-water performance, I think they leave something to be desired. Mm-hmm. I always have a preference for a rigid board when I'm, you know, when we're talking about what's the best on-water experience. Mm-hmm. But if you're optimizing for things outside of that, then the inflatables tend to be something to definitely check out and look at.
Yeah.
And they're easy to ship. So
I know.
From a D2C perspective, that is something that if we're looking at major brands who have a footprint nationally, it's typically going to be, they're going to lean in pretty hard on inflatable product just because of the fact that the logistics are just so much easier to deal with.
Yeah.
You're not dealing with, you know, 11 to 14 foot rigid products that are easily damaged and you have to ship them LTL and all of that. So it's just easier to sell inflatable product. And so you'll notice that a lot of the marketing and a lot of the brands that are pushing paddle boards nationally are going to tend to lean pretty hard into the inflatable product just because of the logistics involved.
Yeah. My mind is going to, what else could be inflatable? Inflatable bike, inflatable garage unit, like what else could turn into an inflatable product? So many options.
Yeah. I think we're going to see a lot of those options. I saw a truck topper.
Yeah.
That was made out of inflatable product a couple weeks ago when I was traveling. It was just like,
this is a new trend, Rob.
Yeah.
We're gonna be the first ones to call it.
Yeah.
Everywhere we look, things will be inflatable.
Totally. Because the technology is getting really good. So this drop stitch technology can be really rigid and conform. Some, you know, it's just a rigid product that allows you to do a lot of things with it. And so I think that to your point, there's gonna be some additional products that we start to see where you're like, man, that's not what I was expecting, but totally works.
You've been in this really interesting space in your company career where you've started to onshore your products. And, you know, for the longest time, you were getting your paddle boards made in China. And I was reading some articles that you wrote and was just kind of discussing like what that looked like bringing manufacturing into the US. And I want to hear more about that because that's something that I haven't gotten to speak too much about on this show. A couple companies did that, especially over the past 2 years, is bringing manufacturing here and making it more predictable and all that. But I wanted to hear from your perspective, like what has that process looked like trying to bring your manufacturing back into the US or into the US for the first time, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, the US manufacturing that we are doing, so we started to offer canoes as part of our lineup in 2021. So we started that through a collaboration with a Canadian canoe manufacturer. And one of my dealers in Northern Minnesota, he introduced us and we collaborate, you know, the dealer's name is Stone Harbor Wilderness Supply. They're up in Grand Marais, way up on the north shore of Lake Superior. And so the owner of that business had wanted to bring in canoes and had found a Canadian manufacturer that was willing to bring their brand of canoes in, or they were willing to act as almost like an OEM and we could brand them however we wanted to. And so that was a conversation that I just happened to be traveling at the time up in that area. And we got onto the topic of canoes and I said, well, if you need a you know, does it make sense to start a new canoe brand? Does it make sense to leverage their brand? Or do we want to try to perhaps, you know, does it make sense for Greydeck to be the brand since we've got some traction in the Midwest already? And so we did make the call to do a collaborative offering with a company called Rayom Canoes out of Canada. And so we co-branded a canoes and brought those in 2021. And then as we were rolling into 2022, I had an experienced canoe builder happened to be walking through one of my other dealers and saw the canoes that we were offering from Canada for sale. And he called me up and we ended up having coffee and I ended up hearing more about his experience. He was from Minneapolis and was an experienced canoe builder and knew how to spin, you know, could spin up that kind of offering if we could build up the shop and we could make that, wanted to make that kind of R&D investment. And so it took a long time for me to think through whether that was something that we wanted to do or not. There's obviously significant investment required and a lot of R&D. But at the time, you know, we'd been coming off of COVID. We'd been coming off of major supply chain issues in China. We had been, you know, Russia had invaded Ukraine. You could see some risk just geopolitically in the world that could disrupt supply chains again. And so, you know, to have some sort of hedge against that in a way that would allow us to, you know, if we had some experience with composites and we had some experience in actually building some stuff here, it would probably make sense for us to try it out and see if we could pull it off. And so we decided let's try to build a canoe here. And the idea was, you know, maybe eventually we could build a model of board, stand up paddleboard here, or we could expand in that area. But for now, you know, if we could establish a high-end canoe product, we've got the market for it in our area. And so we spent the time to build our first model of canoe. It's called the Vision 17. It's a lake tripper, mm-hmm. and it's a perfect canoe for our area in the Boundary Waters and the Quetico Park. So we're really excited about that. I think it's giving us some experience in composites. It's giving us a lesson in resilience, mm-hmm. and troubleshooting and trying to figure things out. But it's been a really good next step for us. And we're still building a lot of our product in China. We're still doing all of our stand-up paddleboards there. And those relationships that were established are still good ones. But to have that ability to you know, have that expertise in-house is giving us additional capacity to be better at the stand-up paddleboard side of the business as well, in terms of repairs that we can do, fixes that we can do. We can just be more resilient in terms of our product offering and customer support and things like that as well. So it's been a good addition. It's definitely tested us in terms of working through issues and overcoming obstacles and things like that. But so far, so good. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be happier in the way that things have gone. And I'm excited for the future and what we're going to do there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So is your goal eventually to have a certain percentage, you know, produced in China and a certain percentage produced, you know, here? Or do you have thoughts around that? Or is it more still in the testing phase where you're like, we'll see?
I think we'll always build canoes here. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. And then in terms of the stand-up paddleboard market, we're going to see what it's going to take. I know that even the paddleboards are smaller, they're definitely more complex vessels, mm-hmm. than canoes. And so I foresee us producing most of our boards still overseas for some period of time, but I'd love to be able to experiment with producing some models here. And I don't know, it'd probably be some specialty models. It might be something that we would be trying to serve a specific niche with. So we've got to think through what that looks like in terms of R&D and where we want to go with that. But I can say that it's more likely than not that we will develop a handful of canoes here and expand that line and then see where our expertise takes us in terms of our ability to do some paddleboards here as well. So long-term, I think, you know, we started as a paddleboard brand and we are, you know, that's still our main business. And so I think it would be great to be able to do at least a model here, if not more, but time will tell and mm-hmm. how that plays out and how much time and effort we've got to spend on that project.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing to think about because, I mean, you hear, you know, all these ideas around this is going to be a borderless economy. Borders don't matter anymore. We have crypto soon and we'll be able to transact however we want when it comes to money and all the barriers, you know, will go away when it comes to that. And then you think about, okay, but the supply chain, there's still borders and things still have to go on boats and planes and get it out of countries. And so I think it'll be an interesting decade to kind of see how those two converge between we're borderless and there's still some holdups here that make it not really the case.
Totally. And I think that there's, you know, I've always believed that, you know, having, and I don't want to say borderless, having a borderless transactions is fantastic. But the reality of it is just that we still have, you know, governments that dictate, you know, there's certain laws, there's tariffs, there's transportation issues. There's all sorts of real world problems in terms of getting product from one continent to another, or even from, you know, intercontinent across borders. And so until that becomes a little bit more frictionless, we will continue to have issues whenever we have major international events.
Yeah, agree. So the one thing I noticed on your website was that you were selling used or refurbished items, which I thought was an interesting angle because I was like, okay, so you guys are kind of like a marketplace. Like, where are these items coming from? Are you the middle person? So tell me a bit about the strategy behind selling used products.
The used stuff is, if you look a month ago, those products wouldn't have been there.
And so the
used product is really a function of during the year, we end up doing demos and we end up visiting dealers and we end up having people test paddle product. And by the nature of the business, we create demo and used gear. And if somebody wanted to trade in, you know, if somebody was trying to trade in a used board, or if they wanted to get rid of a used board, certainly we can take things in on trade. We can also, you know, if somebody's got something that they aren't really interested in keeping around, but it's repairable and they want to give it a second life, we can do all of that in house. And so, you know, we've got some boards that we've just demoed, and then we've got some boards that we've repaired. And so we try to make sure that they get into the hands of people who are looking for good quality product, but don't necessarily want to pay for a new product. You know, the joke was always, if we could manufacture used boards, you know, everybody would be happy because everybody's looking for a deal, you know, a few scratches or a few dents in a, in a product is usually not that big of a deal. And so, you know, we usually do pretty well in trying to find homes for product that is in need of a new owner.
Yeah. No, I love that. I mean, that's where the economy is shifting and like consumer behavior, I mean, especially around clothes, but of course this too, I was like, oh, I totally would buy a used board. I don't mind if it's scuffed, bumped, dented, whatever. I'm not that good anyway. So I'm okay with someone else's hand-me-downs. So I thought that was, very smart to be in there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that there's, you know, we have that ability now. And again, this comes from building the canoes in-house. We've got a lot of skill and a lot of materials that we can use to fix and refurbish product. And so our ability to do that has never been better than it is right now. And so, you know, that's an area where we can look to expand further, and we can, you know, and the market is also maturing and we've got more people with paddleboards that have been around for a decade now. You know, it used to be that all the boards were fairly new and they were all fairly good shape, but we're starting to see products that are pretty rough. And, you know, the canoe market's the same way. There's a lot of canoes that have been around for a long, long time, and they need to have new gunnels put on, or they're rotted out in some way, or they've been damaged, or, you know, people have lost them off the top of their car, whatever. But
that's something I would do.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, sorry, I just flew off my car. Can you help?
Watch out. But yeah, we can fix most of that product. And so our ability to bring those canoes or kayaks or paddleboards or boats, you know, in pretty much anything that's composite material, we can bring back to life in a fairly straightforward manner. And that's all really become available in the last year, just now that we've got the tools in the shop to pull all that off.
Mm-hmm. Like, what is the potential for innovation around paddle boards? I mean, I was already kind of hearing it when you're like, oh, this lake, you need this thing, and this one, if you're going to be walking with it, you need this, which I did not even realize that there could be a lot of innovation in this space. I mean, I think about like lacrosse sticks. It's like, how much innovation can you do for a lacrosse stick? Only so much. And then, you know, but it seems like there's actually a lot more than I realized. So how do you go about thinking about new products in this space?
Well, for us, you know, the initial innovation was really trying to be, it's like that niche within a niche. And so for us, it was kind of that extended, you know, extended touring board where you can go into remote, get in deep into remote places and transport it easily through the woods. So the Quetico and our all day hybrid were boards that allowed for that. I think the fishing niche is interesting because there's just lots of ways that you can rig up boards that allow people to have a platform for fishing rigged up the way that they want to. So we're working on some additional boards that, you know, could accommodate a trolling motor or could accommodate just more weight on the board. Yeah. Again, it's mostly those further niches. So mm-hmm. there's yoga boards that are built for, you can tie them together. They're super, you know, super stable, obviously. So there's niches within paddle boards that I think you'll start to see further development in and trying to fine tune a lot of that. But it is, a lot of it is coming from river boards, things that are really durable. Mm-hmm. So, and then obviously, you know, race and, you know, it's like you can always take that niche a little further than it currently is at. And so further refining, and we're, you know, we're not building race boards. We're not building a ton of, we have a couple of boards that are kind of yoga-esque boards, but we're more into the, I'll call it exploring, adventuring, and fishing kind of falls into that. I think all of those areas are areas that we can likely innovate more in the future. And then from a durability perspective, there's just new options in terms of composites that we can continue to dig into to make boards lighter, stronger, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, there is a in the lake here in Austin, they always have a DJ meetup and people are on paddle boards and they put their speakers on their paddle boards and then people all like circle around them. And so there's one idea. That's all my ideas for today.
Yeah. I like it. I like it.
So many options with this now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. The electrification is also an area where you're starting to see, you know, we've got electric bikes obviously out there, but, you know, mm-hmm. electric fins, things that are allow propulsion without having to necessarily.
Yeah, that's what I've needed.
Yeah.
I don't want to. No. Why? Why paddle? That's basic.
Yeah. Why do that? No. Why paddle when you can just cruise? Yeah. So there's some of that that's happening too. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So over the coming year, what are you looking forward to most in the business?
You know, I think that there's a couple of things in terms of the paddleboard side of the business. We're working on some just new products, again, things that are more durable or just more cater to a certain niche. So that's something that we're exploring on the inflatable side of the, on the inflatable boards. You know, again, those are areas where we can we make it pack smaller? Can we make it easier to store? So if you're living in a, you know, if you're living the van life or you need something where space is really constrained, can we make that board fold into a, you know, into something smaller? So there's definitely some work that we're doing there. And then on the canoe side of the business, we're still just experimenting with different materials, different ways of building canoes, so that we can make them more efficient, lighter, or, you know, have more longevity. And then we're expanding the number of offerings that we've got in that space. So in terms of the product, those are kind of things that I'm excited about. And then just generally speaking, you know, we're still trying to expand our footprint in the US. And so I'm working hard to try to find some sales representation in areas that we don't have boots on the ground, because that is something that with the type of product that we're dealing with, getting them transported to different areas, you know, it just makes dealer relationships are really important in order to get product into people's hands. And so having boots on the ground in different areas of the country is a really important next step. And so working to do that is something that I'm excited about, and we're going to continue to spend time trying to grow our footprint nationally.
Okay, cool. Well, Rob, I wish you all the best with that. I'm super excited to check out some of the products and see where you guys go with the company. So thanks for hopping on the show today. Where can people learn more about you and Gray Duck?
If they want to find more about Gray Duck, grayduckoutdoor.com is where they can find us, and I can be reached on LinkedIn or on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey listeners, thanks for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. It helps spread the word, and I would greatly appreciate it. See you next time.